because of the extensive nature of the public hearing, because of the voluminous kind of information that is before them, and it's unfair, but it would be unfair to ask them to come and give us a report on that tomorrow. So that report will be given on Monday. On Monday, we are having a portfolio committee which starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It is when the commission will be coming to us to share with us, especially on the issue of the public hearings. Today, we'll only consider the property valuation, which is a very important bill, because it sort of complements the other bill that we're dealing with yesterday of restitution of land rights amendment. So I just thought I must make that clear. And we do have a situation where most of our, or some of our members won't be able to be with us because they're already doing other work outside of Parliament. But nevertheless, it is important because we are not going to be taking any decisions. We will just receive a briefing. It's a requirement, it's a formality that we have to go through. And once we have received that report, it will actually clear the way for the committee to start, you know, invoking other processes, because we have to advertise it. And once it's advertised, after 2 weeks, we can then be able to sit down and do what is necessary to ensure that it's refined and it gets back to Parliament as a finished product. So we believe that that we will do without violation of any of our rules. So hence we sought this invitation. But the invitation to Monday itself, it will be a very interesting and important meeting, which I think especially ladies and gentlemen from the media would be interested to come and then sit with us. So, as I indicated, therefore, we are not going to be dealing with the minutes of the previous meeting. What we will do, we will zoom forward in dealing with the property. And for the record, just to say that Honorable Swate will be joining us soon. He agreed with us yesterday that he will another meeting before he comes. So I'm not sure who is going to meet in the department. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Sabo Mahlaila. I'm the Chief Director of Legal Services. With me, on my right, Mr. Thapelo Motsoeneng, the Chief Director of Supply Chain Management. He was very instrumental in the development of the policy for the Office of the Advisor General. And on my left is Mr. Fanny Lowe, who is the legislation specialist responsible for the drafting of the bill. The two of us, myself and Mr. Motsoeneng, are going to do the presentation. He's going to start with setting the background, the policy positions, and then I will do the presentation on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. good morning, Honourable Members.
Good morning.
I'm going to just start by giving a brief background of how we navigated our way to this point where the bill is in front of you. It comes from the process that I believe you're quite familiar with, of the Green Paper on Land Reform that was finalized at the end of 2011. From the end of 2011 into 2012, we engaged on a process of consultation with a number of civil society organizations, organized labor, business, and government craftsmen. The consultation was a multi-pronged one because the proposals that come out of the Green Paper on Land Reform are quite varied, and as a result, they necessitated that a multi-pronged strategy be implemented. And we were dealing then with the one that deals with property valuation, which was eventually called for the property valuation bill. The process went through the usual cluster system within government, being the economic sectors and employment cluster for directors general and for ministers. And it eventually went to the cabinet committee, and it went to cabinet, and eventually we then had a policy that was then approved. We did further consultation after we finalized the policy itself, after cabinet had given us the go-ahead, and we that informed what we have now as the draft bill. I was then requested to then take you through briefly what were the highlights of the policy, and I'm going to attempt to do that now. We recognized the value and the role that land plays within the social and economic space within the Republic of South Africa. We acknowledged in the policy that it is quite important that we ensure proper use of land and property as a resource that is quite essential for the well-being of the Republic of South Africa, or the society of the Republic. For government, land and property is quite a vital resource by which a wide range of socio-economic objectives are pursued. The market mechanism is the primary means by which access to these resources is obtained, and at the heart of this market mechanism is the pricing and valuation function and the requirement for the proper determination of property values. What you will see even in private transactions is that a valuer's role in determining what the price of property is quite crucial. By and large, those who are buying would place a lot of emphasis and reliance on the result that comes from the work that is being done by a valuer to determine what the price for that property is, or what they are prepared to buy that property for. So we acknowledge the role of the valuation of properties in determining the price at which a property transacts eventually. In the past 18 years, the state has not been able to significantly redistribute productive assets to the benefit of the historically marginalized people. Income inequality, poverty, and unemployment have, of course, escalated over this period. We are saying in the policy that the OVG will be at the cutting edge of the redistributive outlook of government. We also saying it will be very critical in pursuing the strategy of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, which is a rapid and fundamental change in the relations of land, cropping, as well as livestock. The problem statement can be identifying two problems of a particular salience to the land acquisition strategy for land reform to date. One is the slow pace of land reform, and secondly is the escalating land prices that are paid by government, closely associated with a competitive regime that is mainly based on market value. Those are the two problems, escalating prices as well as the slow pace. Market value is by and large based on the willing buyer, willing seller principle, established by a process of comparison of prices paid for similar properties in the market. Now, that is basically how valuers would go about determining what is the price for a property. So the property owner would be compensated on the basis of what is determined to be market value. But the difficulty is that the way valuers have been going about it is to regard government as a willing buyer, as a normal buyer within that particular market. But we are making the point and argument that government should not be conceived as a willing buyer, as envisaged in the definition of market value. Because government is required to buy. It's not really about willingness as defined in relation to private citizens who are simply willing to acquire property. But government is required to do so considering certain socio-political imperatives that it needs to deal with. So it cannot be construed in that context as a willing buyer. Secondly, government has got access to the fiscal. And obviously it's large sums of money, even though the large sums of money are not infinite. Nonetheless, it is a significant amount of money, and as a result, disqualifies government as a willing buyer or one that should be regarded in the definition of a market. There are gaps in the legislative and regulatory framework that are underpinning the valuation industry, and absence of a competent organ to lead insofar as valuations is concerned. We know that from time to time the industry in valuations will say that theirs is to determine a value, and the parties to a transaction would be the ones who decide the price or agree on a price. But the point that we're making is that the reliance that the buyer places on the valuation that comes from a competent professional valuer, the reliance that they place on their view is so great that you cannot simply ignore and not want to know what happens behind the number that you are given as a value of a property. Hence we are coming up with these proposals that we are making today. Gaps in terms of the capacity of government to interpret the price dynamics of land and property markets at various scales is also a problem. But we also then recognize and acknowledge that Section 25(3) of the Constitution allows for compensation for property acquired in the public interest by government on basis other than or in addition to the market value. So the market value is not the be-it and end-all of a determination of compensation insofar as the Constitution says. The Constitution empowers us to look at a range of other factors that we can consider when we decide on acquiring property for public interest or in the public interest. There have been various attempts over the years, Chairperson, to give effect or practical effect to Section 25(3) of the Constitution, but these have had limited success. The main policy proposals that have been made and carried through into this bill are that government should implement the constitutional requirement of just and equitable compensation as enshrined in the Constitution. That's number one. Two, government makes greater use of expropriation in its land acquisition strategy. It is there in the Constitution. It is provided for. And that government establishes an autonomous office of the Valuer General to be the one that then takes the lead insofar as determining values is concerned. When we do go into the body of the property valuation bill, we will then see the types of functions and powers that we propose that the legislature gives to this particular office. Fourthly, we propose that government enhances land market information analysis and policy formulation, and that also finds expression in the bill itself. We did, as per our normal protocol in government, we did a regulatory impact assessment, and the teams that worked on the policy and the regulatory impact assessment were separate teams who were independent of each other in terms of thinking. And I must say that what emerged out of the two processes was pretty much identical in terms of what is proposed that the country does with regards to valuations. So, in principle, decision was then taken that we propose the establishment of a fully fledged office of the Valuer General, and this went through the government system as such. Hence, what we have now in the bill. A business case was also compiled, which has been consulted on with the Department of Public Service and Administration for the establishment of this particular office. And as we go on with the presentation, we will then see how we propose that the office be organized. Chairperson, at this point, I'll give over to Member Shaila to with the actual bill itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Going into the actual structure of the bill, in Chapter 1, we have the interpretation and object of the bill. Therein, you will find the definitions of key terms, the object of the legislative proposal, and the application of the Act. And then in Chapter 2, we have the definition of what is the office of the Valuer General. And then in Part 1 of Chapter 2, we talk about the establishment, the status, the functions, and powers of the office, which, in a nutshell, are that it provides for the establishment of the Office of the Valuer General that will be responsible for, 1, the valuation of properties identified for land reform purposes. And by land reform, we mean land redistribution, land restitution, land development, and tenure reform, as well as where a department has made a request for valuation service to be rendered for purposes of acquiring or disposing of property. We are proposing that the Office of the Valuer General, in addition to compulsory valuation of properties for land reform purposes, it be then established as a service provider where government wants to do valuation for purposes of acquiring or disposing of property. The Act will not apply to valuations in terms of the Municipal Property Rights Act. Secondly, the Office of the Valuer General will be responsible for developing criteria and procedures for the valuation of property that has been identified for land reform purposes and monitoring the proper, efficient, and effective valuation of such properties based on set criteria and standard. You will see as we go on with the bill that we have incorporated the factors that are provided for in Section 25(3) of the bill or of the Constitution in determining value for purposes of land reform. I will get to that when we go on. This office is going to then set criteria and procedures for when we're doing valuations for land reform and as a service provider where it's requested. Then Part 2 of the bill in Chapter 2 provides for the Valuer General and the Deputy Valuer General in terms of their appointment and responsibilities. It provides for the appointment of the Valuer General, who must be a South African citizen, a registered valuer, and has sufficient experience in or knowledge appropriate to the following: public administration, public finance, or legal and constitutional matters affecting public administration. This person will be responsible for the performance by the Office of the Valuer General of its functions and is the Chief Executive Officer. The Part 2 again provides for the appointment of a Deputy Valuer General, who is the accounting authority for the Office of the Valuer General. We wanted to lighten the burden of the finances from the Valuer General so that he can focus on the actual operations and the valuations, check the quality, so that the Deputy Valuer General can then worry about the finances and everything else that the Valuer General does not have to worry about. And then in Chapter 3, we are prescribing the manner in which valuation of property is going to be conducted. It provides for the performance of valuations by a registered valuer who must be a member of staff with extensive experience in the valuation of property. We envisage that the Office of the Valuer General will have its own statement, but we're also aware of the fact that immediately they may not have sufficient capacity. So in the bill, we're making provision as well that they may source the services of a private valuer, but for the purposes of that particular valuation, they will be deemed to be a member of the staff of the Office of the Valuer General. The valuation by registered valuer of property that has been identified for land reform for the purposes of determining the value of the property. The definition of value has been linked to Section 25(3) of the Constitution. In the bill itself, in the definitions, where we've taken Section 25(3) and we've said when they determine value, they must reflect an equitable balance between the public interest and the interest of those affected by the acquisition, having regard to all the relevant circumstances, including, and these are the factors that are listed in Section 25(3) of the Constitution, the current use of the property, history of the acquisition and the use of the property, market value of the property, extent of direct state investment and subsidy in the acquisition and beneficial capital improvement of the property, and the purpose of the acquisition. So they're no longer just going to focus on market value and the determining value, but they're going to take in these factors because we have redefined value for the purposes of land reform. And then thirdly, the acquisition or disposal by department for any other purposes than those mentioned above. The powers of the registered valuer when conducting valuations, the conduct of registered valuers, the preparation of valuation reports and the imposition of valuation fees, this would be the normal day-to-day business that are engaged, that are involved when a valuation of a property is conducted. Then in Chapter 4 of the bill, we talk about the financial and other matters. Part 1 of Chapter 4 talks about financial administration in terms of the funding of the Office of the Valuer General, the auditing of their statements and records. And then Part 2, we provide for miscellaneous matters, which include delegation of powers and duties by the Valuer General, regulations that will be subsequently drafted, short title and commencement of the bill. As Mr. Mutaning has indicated, we consulted extensively, both in the policy development stage as well as the legislation drafting process. The following are the institutions, stakeholders that we consulted with. We consulted extensively with government departments, organized agriculture, Institute for Municipal Finance Officers, South African Local Government Association, South African Institute of Valuers. We consulted with banks, the University of Cape Town, and then we consulted with a national reference group, which had a whole mix of people that we put together at the very beginning with the process of the green paper development. We consulted with the South African Council of Property Valuers Profession, South African Institute of Valuers, National African Farmers Union, Agri-SA, Tau-SA, NERPOFAU, ABC, and the SA Sugar and Cane Association. As part of the regulatory impact assessment, the potential financial implications have been that government will have to fund for the first 3 years of operation, and these are still just initial indications, that the first year will be 75 million, 60 million for year two, and 50 million for year three. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I will now put it to the members to raise whatever questions or comments, statements they want to make. While they are still thinking, let me just say it is interesting that the proposal to have this office, the genesis of it is the regulatory impact assessment. In other words, it's coming from a proposal or recommendation that from the report that there is contained in the regulatory impact assessment. So, and I'm raising this thing because every time
I read a newspaper, it is like the RIA recommendations only revolved around the 129 billion. So it seems to me that it's important to make that point. And then secondly, just to say, is the National Treasury, especially on your last point on financial education, is the National Treasury on board? Because the question that keep coming all the time is, we hear you, but where is the money going to come from? So I think it's also important to indicate what the view or the support or whatever, what is the view of the National Treasury in terms of this process? Because indeed, without a commitment to finance or to fund, it might not be able to take off the ground. So I think it's important just to make those two points whilst members are still going through their notes and so on. But also to say that and I'm raising this thing now, I know it's outside your area of operation. I look at the restitution of land trust amendment, the property valuation, and expropriation as a combination that cannot be separated in addressing the issue of reversing the legacy of the 1980s. And I'm raising this as much as we are using an old expropriation act, will it be in a position to respond to what the two bills or two acts in case they are passed are saying? In other words, I think the point I'm raising is your public interest and stuff like that, those things, once there is a serious dispute in terms of money, and I like the way you put it earlier on when you're defining why government cannot be regarded as a willing buyer. So therefore, I'm therefore saying this, I'm just raising this thing as it is just a comment to say, in my view, therefore it means the puzzle is not complete yet. We still need to put an element, because right now we are having an arc, it's not a circle. We have just to put that element to close it down, so it remains a complete circle. So which means there's still work to be done in terms of dealing with the issue of up-to-date expropriation bill. And that is why I gave you your apologies before you came, so you don't have to worry that you came late. Everyone knows, we expected.
Thank you very much, thank you for conveying my apologies. I've got several questions with regard to the Office of the Bureau Agenda. My first question is pertaining to the issue of valuing a land that is under restitution or under claim. I just want to find out as to whether is this office actually not going to actually accept valuers done by an independent valuer in terms of giving the price. Just want to know that point first. And the other thing that the second question is the Office of the Valuer General going to determine the price of a property or a land that is actually under a private somebody who actually want to sell it to the government or that is actually claimed. I just want to know if that's going to determine how much must I sell my property. And then another, the third one is with regard to, I've heard that there is also going to be the Deputy Valuer General. And I want to know as to whether is the Valuer General going to be office bound, or is he going to go to the field to do the work himself, or is he or And also with regard to the finance, the last one, because there is also a demand that is also proposed in terms of from government, that the government need to fund this from the estimated 75 million and also 60 and 50 million. I don't know, and I want to know as to whether this money is actually budgeted for.
Chairperson, thank you. I want to understand on page 7 of the presentation, bullet point number 3. The office is going to be autonomous. Can you explain exactly what it means here so that we understand how are they going to account the government? How are they going to account? And maybe my understanding of autonomous is something else, so I just need clarity on that. And then how are they going to be responsible for accounting purposes? And then on page 12, the performance of valuations by a registered vendor who must be a member of staff with extensive experience in the valuation of property. I think if I heard correctly, it was mentioned that they can be in a position to source an independent person outside. And I want to just ask, why not from the word go? From the beginning, get this experienced person to be in this office so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we go through these problems of sourcing people from outside with who are going to charge a lot of money. Are they going to be charging? Because if they are independent, then there's money that is going to be exchanging hands here. Are they going to be charging government? How are you going to control that in the process when you get an outsider? Because it is my belief that we need to get a person who's experienced from the word go, so that if this person is being paid, he is or she is able to do the work, and there's no need for an outsider. Taking into consideration the problems that are faced by all government levels when it comes to getting outside people. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable November, and then Honorable Kaba, you follow.
Chairperson, thank you. I won't repeat the outsourcing because Honorable Nathaniel has already alluded to that one. Now, the one thing that I want to be cleared on is that this office will be the main office, which is in Pretoria, I suppose. What will happen to the other branches? Is it going to have to work like there is branches or within the 9 provinces? Because all over the country, there are problems. We do need these people. I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is seems to be similar like Swati, but there is some question that in the allowance for compensation for property acquired for the public interest, I want to know to the valuer general that when it valued the property for the public interest, he go back to the community or to the beneficiary to tell them is how much that the valuation of property is the change.
Can I just add just some one or two questions? Will there be an appeal procedure in a situation where the property owner disputes the decision of the evaluator. Is there a procedure to deal with such? And the second one is that let us just assume that there is a collision between an outsourced value and property owner. What is the recourse? Will this office or office of the OBG be given the capacity to conduct valuations throughout the country? Or what is it envisaged in terms of its function? So, and then do we have an idea, for example, of staff component of the office of the OBG? We have an idea of what would be the staff component, because I think from what we gather through our interaction with the people here, it seems to me disputes are the order of the day here. So how are we going to be able to are we going to have the capacity to deal with those two kind of issues? You may
okay. I will start, and then I will Shepo will keep note of those I don't answer, and then she will go to them. The initial comments, Chair, that you made about the restitution bill, the property valuation bill, and the restitution amendment bill. We, amongst the government departments in this list that Tepo showed earlier on, under number one is government departments. In those government departments, we were meeting with the Department of Public Works and the Department of Cooperative Governance and DCOC, Department of Cooperative Governance, yes. And we were working with a team from DPW that's working on the expropriation bill, which will eventually become an act. And there are certain clauses in that bill which make reference to the Office of the Valuer General, maybe not as explicitly as it would say Office of the Valuer General, but a structure that deals with valuations within government. Remember that in our own bill we are saying our focus is land reform. We are squarely in the space of land reform, but then it becomes available as a service provider to the other government departments. So that space of valuation is quite important for the proper functioning of the expropriation mechanism within government. So those discussions are there. Regarding the questions that came from Honorable Swate, are we not accepting values from private valuers? When valuers go out to do a valuation, they get an instruction from their client, whether it's a bank or it's government or whoever is asking them to go out and do a valuation, they give them an instruction and they will do their work in a particular way as per the requirements of the client. But by basically still guided by their professional ethics and the manner in which they go about doing their business. When they do valuations for rural development and land reform, they will be given a set of instructions to then do that valuation in a particular manner. That manner that says, have you considered these things that Mema Shaila was listing earlier on? History of acquisition, current use of the property, the extent of state investment in that property, and so on. Those are, by and large, the things that we will expect of a private valuer to do when they are doing work for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Is the OVG going to determine price? The OVG is going to determine the value. Earlier on, I explained that by and large, what then becomes the price comes from the value that has been determined. So for instance, let's say the department wants to acquire this property and the valuer general comes back and say the value of this property is 2 million rand. An accounting officer cannot then go and pay 6 million rand. He would then say, but why if the value is 2 million rand in line with the nonsense standard that has been set by the valuer general, would you pay more than the 2 million rand that has been set as the value? So yes, we government wants to be able to say this is what it is worth in line with the constitution. The valuer general and the deputy valuer general. The valuer general, we have insisted even in the policy, in the bill itself, that he must be a valuer, a registered one in terms of the South African Council for the Property Valuers Profession. So we don't want to take a lawyer who is not a valuer and expect them to then play the role of a valuer. So we insist that they be a valuer. As to whether they will be in the field, I would want to say to think that they will have a team of people who will be valuers themselves at different levels. Some of them are candidate valuers, some of them are associate valuers in terms of the different categories in the profession. I want to imagine that those are the people who will go onto the field and not necessarily the valuer himself, the valuer general himself. As for the deputy valuer general, as Memasela was explaining, we would want the deputy valuer general to keep the fires burning, to ensure that there is an administration running, there is financial compliance to the TFMA and so on, and run the back office by and large of the office of the valuer general. What does autonomous mean? As the questions come out from the members, we wanted the public to have a sense of autonomy between the department, which is the one that is contracting or transacting with them, as well as as opposed to the people who are determining the value. So the valuer general will not be independent of the executive. So the valuer general will report to the executive through the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform, but will exist not inside the department itself, so that there is a level of autonomy and it inspires confidence also with the ones that are transacting with them. So the office of the valuer general should not tomorrow take on a life of its own and outside of the ideals that have been set by the executive. So they will be autonomous, but they will not be independent. They will account to the executive. About the building of internal capacity, we were making this point quite sharply that the state needs to build its own capacity when it comes to this issue of valuations. But we also recognize that it may take time for us to be able to attract qualified valuers and even grow our own trees. It will take some time. So we will start off with a team, depending on to what extent we are then able to recruit immediately. But in order for work to then continue, we then say the bill should allow the valuer general to determine the mix between what you get internally and what you get outside of government through your normal contracting mechanisms that exist within the Public Finance Management Act. We accept that it is better that government has its own capacity internally. So the plan that should be produced should be one that says over time we'll then be able to do our own valuation using our own staff and not going to the private sector. But I need to emphasize, even when we do employ a valuer that is in private practice, they will do valuations in a manner that is determined by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We are not asking them to go and fix venues, but we are saying they must be guided in a particular way in which they do valuations. They cannot do valuations for land reform purposes as if they are doing valuations for two private parties that are transacting on a willing buyer, willing seller basis. They will do valuations with the foresight of just an equitable compensation, as it is in line with the Constitution. The office indeed will have a national footprint, because it will work valuations throughout the Republic. I think there is just one last one. The question of collusion between the seller and the buyer, as per what the chairperson asked, the part of the reason why we insist that we use valuers to do valuations, we don't use accountants to do valuations, is because valuers are required in terms of the Act, in line with the South African Council of Property Valuers, to behave and conduct themselves in a particular way, as it relates to their professional work, as it relates to their ethics and so on. So we are pinning our hopes on when we do find wrongdoing in their conduct, we are then able to invoke the penalties that are there in terms of their own professional registration, which may include them being taken off the role of valuers. And we are talking quite extensively to the council for them to support us in the work that we'll be doing when we focus on the space of valuations. The one that I did not take, I'll ask Mema Hela to respond.
Thank you, Chair. He actually responded to most of them. The one that he left out was, is National Treasury on board? As part of the processing of the bill, we went to the DG cluster. And in our DG cluster, the DG of National Treasury is a member. They have supported the bill, in principle, essentially saying that money will be made available. And again, when we went to the Cabinet Committee, the Minister of Finance was there. So the expectation is that money will be there. Whether it's budgeted for in the department at the moment, I may have to ask my colleague to confirm.
Chair, the department as it is doing valuations. Remember, we are formalizing the system. We are correcting some of the things that we picked up over time that they were wrong. But there is already expenditure that is going through to pay valuers that are in private practice. So there is already a baseline. It may not necessarily be to the full extent, but we are, having interacted with the Treasury, we are quite confident that we will be able to fund also from the baseline that we already have.
And then last, Chair, the issue of whether there's going to be an appeal process between the OVG and the private person. The valuer determines value, and then what then happens is that an offer is made which the buyer can either accept or decline on the basis that it's probably not what they want. If it's property that has been identified for land reform, we always reserve the right to expropriate should that be the decision. So we can expropriate in the event that there's no agreement between the department and the seller. I think that essentially concludes the questions. I'm not sure if there's anything that you may have left out.
Thank you very much, Chair President. I think my question was not actually adequately answered with regard to property owner who may opt to have an independent venue. I didn't actually speak of a venue that is from the department. I'm talking of a private venue. Because I just want to know as to whether, in terms of this, are the people going to be allowed to actually to use that space of being not because even in legal profession, if I don't want to use a lawyer from a legal aid, I can still use my private lawyer. So I just want to know from that angle. And my other issue is with regard to my other follow-up question is with regard to the issue of this issue of autonomous. I just want to challenge maybe or to ask clarity in terms of how is it the powers that the office will have, is it equals to the powers of the powers of the public protector, for example, so that we can know if they are really having the same powers or the powers like that were given to the Human Rights Commission, so that when we talk, we can understand exactly which actually level of power to that office of I think somewhere people might feel that maybe they're being actually suppressed because there are laws that have been actually the laws that have been put. Is it not also going to make people to feel that the government is just wanting them to give them the price and say if this land is too free, you don't negotiate for that to move. I just want to find out the clarity in terms of that. Thank you.
Maybe just to add something, what the first question that you raised about the use of private networks vis-a-vis the state and the choice that an individual has. So I want to find out in terms of medicine, they do have a body that controls all those practitioners. I think in terms of legal also there is so with this profession, is the South African Institute of Valuers having some kind of control over? Because I don't think a valuer can just determine a price out of his head or something. There has to be a regulatory kind of mechanism that gives boundaries in terms of the method they should use in determining a price, which ordinarily, if it was not for this market issue, it would actually lead them to almost same prices, not far apart from one another. So I want to find out whether is there such a body and what is its role in terms of guiding valuers how to determine prices. Because if there is such a role, obviously, then the question that Nomoswate raises won't actually arise. But it seems to me they're operating as individuals, depending on the response that you want to give.
Chairperson, I just want to make a follow-up on the financial implications. Here you indicated 3 years that the government will be funding. After 3 years, then what is going to happen? Do you foresee a situation where the office is going to have funds of their own, or the department is going to have a way of assisting them after 4 years? Because if you look at the money, it declines over years. Then after 4 years, will it be in a position to generate its own funds, or what is going to be the position?
Okay, you may respond.
Okay. The South African Institute of Valuers is a voluntary body that they belong to. But then there is the South African Council of Property for the Property Valuers Profession. It resides within the public works space. That one is a regulatory body. So how can I put it, the counterpart to the health professionals that you made reference to. So they are required to adhere to that. The gap that exists is that the council has adopted what is called the international valuation standard. So they use the international valuation standard as the standards to which they then require valuers to adhere to. They haven't produced a standard that is unique to our environment. Hence, the department then says we will then set these nonsense standards so that when they do valuations in the land reform space, they should then adhere to those standards. And then the one on, I think, okay. There was an example about the public protector. The public protector is a Chapter 9 institution which is independent of the executive. The Office of the Valuer General will not be a Chapter 9 institution. We don't propose that. We simply propose that it operates autonomously of a government department, but it still reports to the minister. So it is within the executive. It reports to an executive authority who is a minister, a cabinet minister. So it's part of the administration. It doesn't fall under the IEC and so on. It's not in that category. About the use of private valuers. Private valuers, a property owner who wishes to sell, or whose property has been identified as a property that government wants to acquire the public interest in the land reform space, is at liberty to approach a private valuer for them to assist them in their negotiation for a price if they want to do that. But the government department of land reform and of rural development and land reform that is attached to the transaction will be guided by the Office of the Valuer General. They will use the Office of the Valuer General, and they will not be in a position to then step outside of the value that is being determined by the Office of the Valuer General. Neither will the property seller, at least to the extent of the negotiation. If the negotiation deadlocks, then we invoke the Expropriation Act, which will be the Expropriation Act at that particular time. And that then allows us, in terms of how it reads at the moment, it allows us to take occupation, pay a portion of what it has been determined by the Valuer General, and then the court process invokes. Oh, the budget. We are talking about 3 years because we are working in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework, and it's a three-year rolling plan, so we don't talk about the option. But the Act does, the bill does propose a provision for charging of fees by the Office of the Valuer General when it does work on behalf of the other state.
If I may just ask, is this still not giving an impression that the government just want to buy a property on their own price? Because if it is like that, it seems that if a person is got a property and the government is the buyer, for example, under event claims, and then they are saying that you cannot charge this price. It seems you want to buy, even put in a price. Is this actually not giving the people that impression that even if you sell to government, but the government is also putting a price on your property? Because I think the owner also must also have that space of feeling that I'm owning this property. Is this not taking that right?
Thank you, Chair. I think what needs to be emphasized is the fact that the Valuer General determines the value, and where it's for land reform purposes, we insist that they consider the factors that are provided for in Section 25(3) of the Constitution, which we have then incorporated into these drugs into these bills so that when they guide evaluation, they consider those factors. And then the government will go to a private and owner and say, the valuer general has done an evaluation, this is the value determined, and this is the price we're prepared to buy the property at. The landowner can say, no, I'm not prepared to sell at that amount, and we can go to court for determination of the value if we're choosing not to expropriate. We cannot buy it by force, unless then we invoke the provisions of expropriation, then we follow the expropriation route, as my colleague explained earlier.
It seems to me that the challenge of determining a reasonable price is the main reason why we have an office called an OVG. Now, after this explanation, it seems to me that is the issue. And it seems to me the valuer general, as it has been pointed out, determine the value, and after such a determination, the department will not be in a position in purchasing that property to buy or to pop out anything that is more than the value determined by the valuer general. But of course, there are recourses, as it has been explained. If the landowner decides that I don't want to accept the price, there are two processes. One, expropriation, because we must remember that the state does have an obligation in terms of the constitution to get land and give it to the people. That is why they talk about public interest, then they will expropriate. Or they can choose a court route, it has been explained, where a court will determine whether the price is fair or not. But at the center of everything is the principle of just and equity. And then the just and equitable, as I understand it, it seems to be saying there shouldn't be winner, there shouldn't be loser. The state must be able to perform its function to get the land and distribute it. But the owner or the seller must also get a reasonable price which tally with the value of land in terms of the determination made by the value agent. So I think that even during our public hearings, I think we had a number of people saying they would want this office to function because they see it as the most quickest way of resolving a dispute in relation to prices of land. Because remember, if we really want to reverse the legacy of 1913. As a committee, if we want to make a contribution in that process, I think we have to embrace processes, proposals and recommendations which are aimed at ensuring that the mandate is realized. And must also recall that we went out to a number of areas, first and foremost, to look at what are the obstacles that can stand on the way of this process. That is where the ad hoc committee was appointed. It has done its work. We had many people who were quoting it extensively yesterday. But among other things now, I think we are saying we are at the level where we have to move. Now I want to say this is the section 75, the text 75, and we isn't it. It is a section 75. am I right?
Yes.
So Section 75, therefore, would mean that we, as a committee, would advertise this bill from here. It is determined that it has to be advertised for a period of 2 weeks, and thereafter, we will come back as a committee, engage with the bill, go clause by clause as a committee. We recall that there was a person in one of the public hearings who demanded that we must go through this amendment with clause by clause in a meeting of about, I don't know how many people, many people. But this will be a formal way that we are going to follow in dealing with this legislation. Now, I think that is the way to go from now. And the questions that we have raised, they've been answered. But I'm just saying we still going to have a chance to engage with the bill. This was just a session where it is tabled. Get an understanding of some of the issues that the bill is talking about, and we're going to have a chance to sit down among ourselves and engage further on. Of course, that is the good thing about democracy. Of course, it always takes a long time for you to make a simple decision because you cross up. In a dictatorship, you could just simply say, no, this the bill is final, and then we're ready. But democracy, we don't do that. I'm not certain.
Thank you, Chairman. I've heard you when we were in, we were doing all the public hearings that actually just the chairman is replacing the meeting by I think that's why you faced all what you have just indicated. So I just want to find out, because sometimes you talk of people viewing the property and coming up with advice. But sometimes it can be a compensation. So I just want to know whether are we moving from buying somebody selling a property at a reasonable price, or are we saying it's only a compensation? In fact, this bill is based on the government can compensate the owner of the property. So I just want to know if we're moving from that direction. Because sometimes if we're saying it's compensation, yes, I can understand maybe it's not all about
general will determine the value of the net, not compensate, the value. The value general will look at the land, do all the necessary things that need to be done when you value the land, and arrive at the position that says this land values X, let's say 5 million. Which means if you sell that thing with that price, you don't lose. You actually benefit. But in terms of the scale that has been used when you bend the land, so that can't be compensation. It's the price of the land. The problem with the system now is that, well, let me put it this way. The reason for the valuer general to be arranged in the office is to avoid overpricing. Where there are no rules, it becomes the law of the jungle, survival of the fittest. So that's what this thing is trying to avoid. So I can only say compensation is something else, but this, in my view, is a value determined properly by the valuer general. which allows you to sell a land at a particular price. That price doesn't allow you to lose, to get your profit, but your profit will be a reasonable profit. I don't know if maybe, if I'm out of order, and then the technicians from the department are here, they can call me to order whilst we're here, so that when you go back to the committee and then you are not there, then I'm roasted. Am I right?
Thank you. The explanation is perfect. The amount paid is not compensation in the manner that is meant when you expropriate. That the compensation is paid in expropriation. Here we're talking about the value where we are buying and the amount is paid in the transaction.
Please explain to me what happened during expropriation. Is the compensation? Huh? Let me ask this. How does it work? Does it differ from the ordinary transaction when you sell the land? If let's say, for example, the Dollar General says this land worth 3 million and the seller refuses to budge until it reaches a stage where the state decides now that no, we need this land for public use, and therefore, are they going to pay the price as determined by the Bureau General, or they want to determine what the compensation price is going to be?
So maybe, let me attempt to explain it by taking a step back. There is a property owner who wants to sell, and I go there as a private. And I say, I've seen an advert that you're selling your property. And I go to the bank. The bank will say to a valuer, go and determine the market value of this property. And they will go out and they'll come back and they say, the market value of this property is 5 million rand. And then me and the property owner can negotiate. Maybe I can pay a little less if he agrees. Otherwise, I'll pay the 5 million rand. That's a value determined on the basis of market value. Now, we are saying, here is a government department that wants to purchase the same property in the public interest for land reform purposes. Then we are saying, this valuer who's going to determine the value, who would have otherwise considered just market value, we're now saying to him, you are not going to just consider market value. You're going to consider other things. The current use of the property, the history of acquisition, the extent of the state investment in that particular property, and the intended use of the property. All these things will have an impact on what we will then determine as being the value of that property for public interest and in the land reform space. And that number may be different. I don't want to venture into saying whether that number will be different in a manner, in upward or downward, but we will have been convinced that the valuer did the work and considered what the supreme law of the land says we should consider when we are entering into these transactions in the public interest. If then the property owner says they will not budge, maybe the value that came out was lower, then you need to invoke the provisions of the Expropriation Act. And at the level when the Expropriation Act process is being followed, eventually you will then pay the compensation that is being referred to. And it becomes a court process that determines whether there was adherence to the Constitution and to the Expropriation Act. The idea is that the market value should not be the be-hidden end of what government pays when the Constitution empowers us to look at other things.
Okay, so which means, if I understand you correctly, the market value process will continue.
continue, but only in private transactions. When the state is involved, it's a different ballgame.
Not all of state transactions. There are other state transactions that involve property that would still follow market value. But when it is land reform, we're speaking about land reform and in the public interest, we will then look at these other issues.
It's much clearer to me than it was yesterday. Are you happy or not, Swati? You know, happiness does not mean you agree, but just... Well, in the absence of any further questions, I would like to thank the department for giving us this explanation. It will help us a great deal, but as a committee, we are happy that you have taken time to explain to us as to what the bill intends to achieve. So I want to say to all of you, thank you very much for coming. The meeting is adjourned.